Thank you, Professor Mark Turin. I'm so happy that Mark and the team of CRASH, is that the way you pronounce the acronym, gave me the opportunity to come and visit such a prestigious university like Cambridge. I had only heard of since my childhood, but never had the chance of visiting officially here. And also to give me this opportunity to share my experiences, which you may find some of them very unusual, if not unique. And the fact that so many of you have come shows that you have deep interest also in endangered language issue and the documentation of it. And I'm sure that after this lecture, you will go home with some hope that yes, languages can be revived and languages, documentation of languages can enlighten us and also throw light on the human evolution. I'll start with this famous person who became very famous after her death. Is it loud enough? She's Boa Senior, the last speaker of Bo, who died last year, and she was covered enormously by all the American, European, Indian, South Asian press, and she's singing in Bo language. My structure of the talk is something like this. I'll first introduce you, because some of you may not know about the geography and topography of the islands that I had been working on, and the very famous question that whether there are two language families or one in those islands, and how we documented the names of birds, and again, how I made the dictionary, which is here, demo. In fact, all these books that I wrote in the last few years are here for demonstration. This is the map of the Andaman Islands. As you can see, they are in the southeast of Asia, in the Bay of Bengal. And these tiny, they look very tiny. They're closer to Burma than to India because they're 1,200 kilometers away from Calcutta, but only 193 kilometers from Myanmar. And this is a tiny little island which is known as Strait Island. That's where most of the Andaman, Great Andamanese reside, where I worked. As you can see, this map gives you a better picture. And it looks like a landmass, but it's not. There are 250 islands. Not all are inhabited, only 50 of them. But I did the pilot survey of the Andaman Islands from the extreme north to all the way to the south. This is known as Little Andaman, and this is known as the Great Andaman. The topography of Andaman is also very interesting. The Eurasian and the Indo-Australian tectonic plates meet in the Indian Ocean. Over geological time scales, the collision dynamics resulted in the formation of a long mountain range. Tsunami of 2004 was an outcome of this collision dynamics. The Andaman and Nicobar Islands are the numerous peaks jutting out of the sea, while most of the mountain range lies submerged underwater. And this is the alarming picture of the languages. In 1800, as you can see, the entire set of Andaman Islands were inhabited by Andamanese, the Great Andamanese, and they spoke their languages. And here the yellow part was occupied by the Jarawas, and Jangil got extinct in 1920. This is a tiny little island called Sentinel Island. Sentinelese are still there, but nobody has ever arrived on that island, and nobody knows what their language is because they're very defensive. They start shooting arrows when anybody tries to reach near them. And then there are Onges who lived in Little Andaman, and there were quite a few in the early 19th century, but look at the state now. And I visited Little Andaman and I stayed with the Onges also. So I actually had an opportunity to study these languages. The Great Andamanese are 56 in number, Onges are 100 in number, and Jarawas are 300, and Sentinelese, as I said, are inaccessible. The speakers of these languages belong to Negroid tribe, and I conducted this study in two different phases. My first study was supported by the Max Planck Institute of Evolutionary Anthropology at Leipzig, in Germany, and this is the LSA, Linguistic Survey of Andaman, which I did in 2001-2002. And later on, I was fortunate enough to get a mega grant from School of Oriental and African Studies under the ELDP program, which is funded by the Hans Rausing Endangered Language Project. And this project was known as VOGA, Vanishing Voices of Great Andamanese. And what I'm going to present today to you are the results of this study in this project. Now, this is the geographical distribution as of today. This is the little tiny little island called Strait Island, where I spent most of my time. It looks like a comma in the sea. The interesting aspect about the Andamanese is that the latest research by geneticists indicates that Andamanese are the survivors of the first migration from Africa that took place 70,000 years before present. They are the last representatives of pre-Neolithic Southeast Asia. And this is the migration route that the geneticists generally chalk out from here to, as you can see, and this is going back to 70 to 60,000 years. The Andamanese represent the initial settlement by modern humans and have lived in isolation until the beginning of the 19th century. So these two points are very important. One is the ancient migration, and the second is that they have lived in isolation. So the contact was minimal or perhaps did not exist before the 19th century. These are the Andamanese community members that I took the picture of in Strait Island. Now, this is another community, the Jarawa, that I talked about. And I showed you, this is a Jarawa boat song. You see, she's singing in one breath. And there's another Jarawa bus song. The interesting part of Jarawa songs, as you see, is very different from Great Andamanese. They sing a syllable and they sing it in one breath. And one person sings it till he loses his breath, and then the other person picks up from where he left. And this is how it goes on. But as I said here, these songs are yet to be deciphered. We do not know what do they really mean, each and every syllable. These are the Jarawa girls dancing, you know, in the forest. This is a map of Little Andaman, which again looks like a fish. And I spent quite a lot of time here in the northern part where the Onges reside. And the journey to the Little Andaman was not easy. There's a small little video strip I'll show you, because we have to cross this a creek which was lurking with crocodiles underneath our boat. And then it opens into a large open sea. But there are several creeks like this in the Andaman Islands that you have to cross many times to reach a particular island. And they are not very safe to travel, as I said. And I do not know swimming, so I was much more worried about that part also. You see, this is the open sea. And one had to walk 7 miles on the sand to reach the Dugong Creek, where the Onges live. And this is another song by Onge. I purposely brought the Onge boat song so that you could compare that how Onge and Jarawa sing differently. This is the first day of our reaching the Little Andaman. All the children surrounded us. And this is an Onge father teaching his child how to make a bow. And the languages of these colonizers are important repositories of our shared human history and civilization. And linguists had maintained that all languages of the Andaman belong to the same family. It was considered a language isolate. This is the situation before I took over the study. And it was always considered that India has five language families, Indo-Aryan, Dravidian, Austroasiatic, Tibeto-Burman, and Andamanese as an isolate. But the linguistic research done by me on the accessible languages of the Andaman Islands, however, revealed little commonality between Great Andamanese and Jarawa and Onge. And I proposed at that time in 2003 that Proto-Greater Andamani seems to have a separate family than Onge-Jarawa, and they had 10 different languages once spoken in the islands, but when I reached in 2001, only 4 were there. I mean, the remnants of the 4 languages were there. And this I proposed in 2003, and I presented my results at Max Planck Institute, and which were pasted on the Andaman website in 2003 and 4. Later on, they've published in 2006, and book is here. But the interesting aspect was that after I published, I presented my research, the geneticists had this to say: the Great Andamanese and Jarawas constitute a distinct genetic pool that is different from the rest of the African and Asian population. The aboriginal populations of Andaman Islands seem to have remained in isolation for a much longer period than any known ancient population of the world. And the geneticists corroborated my research by saying that analysis of complete mitochondrial DNA sequences from 2 out of 3 accessible tribes, Onges and Great Andamanese populations, revealed 2 deeply branching clades that share most recent common ancestors in founder haplogroup M. So haplogroup M is the most common one, but as you can see, they said that Onges had haplogroup M32 and Great Andamanese had M31. So there are 2 different haplogroups, and as they said, they remained in isolation, they had no contact with each other, and they separated much 65,000 years ago. So it was very interesting to see that how linguist work was corroborated by the geneticists, by the DNA samples, while, you know, linguists and anthropologists, we don't have that kind of robust markers of that old. And then in 2005 onwards, I got this grant from the HRELP, and I pursued this research specifically on Great Andamanese because I realized the language was dying. When I reached in 2001, there were only 36 members. They multiplied more, and more children were born. So now today they are 56, but the speakers are not very many. When I started my work, there were 10 of them, but now there are only 5 speakers left. And I did more study other than linguistic, and I dug up more material in cultural, genetic, anthropological, and archaeological evidence, which proved beyond doubt that Great Andamanese constitutes an independent 6th language family of India. And this was published in Language Sciences in 2008-2009. So this is the present picture of language families in India. Here we have 4 language families spoken in the mainland and 2 in the Andaman Islands. Now, if the genetic data is believed to be true, then Andamanese represents the first settlement colony outside Africa, and Great Andamanese is the very first language family of South Asia, and perhaps one of the first of the world. I mean, this is a speculation, but it has to be proven right or wrong. We cannot rule out the possibility of multiple dispersions from Africa at different times and also from different locations. We may also consider positing not one but 2 separate migrations of Africa into the Andamans. The first one by the Great Andamanese and the second one by the Ang family. I call Onge and Jarawa as Ang because these 2 communities call themselves Ang, and Onge is an Englishization of Ang, I think. Now, this study or these results of mine are yet to be corroborated by the population genetics. Okay, this is the map of the Andaman Islands of the 19th century, which shows you that there were 10 different languages spoken. I have, instead of vertical, I have put it in horizontal fashion, this map. And you can see that the Jarawas were here, surrounded by the southern Great Andamanese language, but the Andaman trunk road was made, and they were pushed towards the western coast of the Andaman Islands, and they lost a lot of their jungles, and that's an issue which many of us are fighting against, that why government had to take this course, and they were supposed to close down the ATR, which they have not. Anyway, so the present Great Andamanese that is spoken is actually a mixture of these 4 North Andamanese languages. The rest are extinct now. This is the northern variety, and the northern variety is, the question is, what is PGA, what is present Great Andamanese? It's a kind of leveling or different linguistic systems. It appears that several grammatical inputs have contributed to generate the PGA. The linguistic system of PGA appears to be close to coinization because the four languages have given its input into it. As the language is highly endangered, with five terminal speakers remaining, it is very difficult to say how far the language is mixed. When we began our research there, there were 10 speakers, but today it is... So I'll bring this map again just to show you that in mid-70s and early 70s, these four language groups, Aka Bo, Aka Chari, Aka Khora, Aka Jero, which were the northern varieties, there were stray speakers here and there. So Government of India pulled all of them together and put them in Strait Island so that, you know, they don't lose their language, they don't lose themselves, and the tribals are not virtually wiped out. So in a way, this is what happened. And that's why PGA derives its lexicon from four mutually intelligible varieties of North Great Andamanese languages, Sare, Khora, Jeru, and Bo. The syntax of Great Andamanese appears to be based on that of Jeru, although the influence of other three cannot be ruled out. It has been noticed recently that Kede and Puchikwar, which are the central Andamanese languages, have also contributed to its lexical stock. And all that has been documented in this dictionary that I have made. Because our speakers, you know, one of the speakers had a background of Kede as well as Pujukar. So that's why we have noted down the words which came from there. The dismal part is it's no longer transferred to the younger generation, and as such is a moribund language with five speakers left in the community of 55. One died recently. Older people no longer prefer to communicate in the PGA and use it only as a code language. Considering the geographical inaccessibility of the area, lack of will of the people to speak the heritage language, and its moribund status posed a real challenge for data elicitation. What we linguists and anthropologists and other historians believe, the tribal societies are knowledge societies, storehouses of information about the ecological diversity which is essential for the survival of this planet. Cultural beliefs, values, knowledge and behavior in relation to the environment are expressed in language. If transmission of languages to younger generation is absent, loss of language leads to loss of beliefs, values and knowledge. And I'll show you this, that through my through the words and the language, that how this is an important statement. Now let's take for example the concept of space and smell, which plays a very important role in Andamanese, Great Andamanese community. Space is a cultural construct that can be defined by the movement of spirits, animals and humans along vertical and horizontal axis. The distinction between spirits and the rest is based on the existence of smell. So spirits don't smell, the rest of the elements in the environment smell. So smell basically distinguishes between spirits and non-spirits. We noted there are 18 kinds of smells, and I'm sure there must be many more, but many speakers died who were very fluent in the language, including those that emit from corals, seagrass, stones, etc. The worldview of Great Andamanese space and all natural elements in it, like sun, moon, tide, winds, earth and forest, as well as sea creatures, together constitute the cosmos. And I mean, I can go on and on about their worldview, but time is short. Just another example, the concept of time, you know, the model of temporal categorization is known as the honey calendar. And this is based on the names of the blooming flowers of the season and the bees that collect the honey from those flowers. So the whole year is divided into a honey calendar. So these are important aspects. What we did, because the language was dying, and we thought that since we are not getting much more material than we needed to write a grammar, that was the initial stage. There was one speaker who was very good whose knowledge about the environment was very good. So I started collecting names of birds from him. And this is what we did, the Avian study of Great Andamanese names, and we analyzed the pragmatic features, morphogenetic features of the names, similarity or dissimilarity of Great Andamanese names with current ornithological description, and ethno-semantic features, and the word formation processes involved, because this was done by linguists, so naturally I was involved in that also. I was collaborated, this was a collaborative program, and an ornithologist, a famous ornithologist from India, Satish Pandey, helped me classify these names of the birds in Latin. For example, look at this owl. He is called Puro Terkuro, which means clap loudly. Now, because when the owls have this habit of flapping their wings at night, and it sounds like a clap, big clap, so the owl is called Puro Terkuro. And it's so interesting, you know, we did so many, classification, analysis of the names of these birds, and very interesting attributes were depicted by these names. For example, this is just one slide I've brought, which has 19 attributes. So there are 9 names of birds which are by the size. There are 3 names by shape, 13 by plumage and color, 18 by habitat, and so on and so forth. There are, I mean, they're feeding, nesting, movement, all kinds of information that the birds' names give. So the birds' names are not opaque like in English or Hindi. They're very transparent because they depict what the bird's habits are or what the shape is. There are also like observer-related attributes. For example, there is one bird which is by because of as omen. Another one is named because as a warning, an object of beauty, and so on and so forth. But as I said, we also did the semantic analysis of the Great Andamanese names. Now, for example, there are many birds which have 3 attributes put together in their names. For example, size, habitat, and eponym, one name. Body part, call, and correlation with other object, another name. Descriptive migratory status, feeding habit, and habitat, you know. Descriptive of body parts, its function, and association with some other animate object, and on, there are many ways. You can see all this. I have brought this book, which was published by OUP, and it is here. The bird book is here for documentation. And this is how the team, our ornithological team, and us, we are there in Mount Harriet. You know, Sophie can relate to it, perhaps. We identified 109 species of birds belonging to 14 orders and 38 families. 25 species are endemic, 31 species are migrants. And the ethno-ornithological classification and modern zoological taxonomy show high level of correspondence at folk generic level. This was an eye-opener for me, because large number of names of Great Andamanese, if you translate them into English, and you translate the corresponding Latin names, the scientific names in English, it's the same. And this was, for example, look at this. Pietrilla, which is a common name, Latin name is Lalage nigra. The meaning of Latin or English is beautifully shiny black bird. And the meaning Great Andamanese name is shiny plumage. Look at storm petrels. This is the Latin name, and it translates into birds that walk on water. If you translate the Great Andamanese name, it means splashing water surface like a waterfall. Look at Eurasian curlew. This is the Latin name. It means bow-like beak. We just showed the picture. And this means foreigner with curvy beak, because it's a migratory bird. So the name of the bird is foreigner with a curvy beak. Same for woodpecker. The Latin name translates one who strikes the tree, and this also exactly said the bird which pecks at wood, and so on. And oriole, again, this same Latin name means yellow bird, and this in Great Andamanese also it means yellow bird. So they had a name for color term for yellow. It's amazing. These are the two birds pictures I brought, which is the same thing. Staracha jogu means nest and ornament. This is a swiftlet, ornament swiftlet, and this is a woodpecker, which also was our cover page of our book. This is the book. He was the person who basically gave me all the information. He was a storehouse, and his dictionary couldn't have been completed without him. But unfortunately, he died 2 years ago at very young age. So as far as the language documentation is concerned, we in this project, I tried to, since the language was dying, I always think the documentation is a job of a greedy linguist or a greedy scientist. you document anything, everything, because it tells you, language tells you everything about the society, the culture, the history, the migration. So we did all this, you know, we have lexicon and phrases, sentences, tales and narrations, songs and riddles, indigenous knowledge and beliefs, cultural practices, folk classification of flora and fauna, sketches and paintings by the children who made, grammar, and many, many more. At present, I'm writing my grammar. This is the cover page of the dictionary. You can see it here. It's demonstrated here. So on the brink of extinction, the Great Andamanese language, one of the oldest in the world, had been crying out for concerted effort for salvage and documentation. And this multilingual dictionary is a maiden effort to capture the last remnant data. As the Great Andamanese culture followed a completely different trajectory from those of the agrarian pastoral societies, the documented entities in this dictionary give an invaluable insight into the ancient cognitive world of the Great Andamanese people. And you have to really look into the dictionary and read it to be convinced about this. I'll give you a little few slides about the how we made this dictionary, because the dictionary comes with a CD-ROM. So special software for making the dictionary was designed by Karen Buesman from SIL, Institute of Linguistics in USA, Summer School Institute of Linguistics. And it is a trilingual, triscriptal, English, Great Andamanese, Hindi dictionary written in Roman Devanagari IPA. The dictionary is from English, so English is the head word, but our database was in Great Andamanese, so we had to reverse this, and we had certain technical problems in reversing it, but we sorted out because it was in the toolbox program. It comes with a CD-ROM, which is equipped with fantastic search facilities. I'll give you a little demo here. Pictures and sounds recorded in natural habitat. And our database, as I said, was in Andamanese English in the Hindi toolbox program. Then the dictionary also has field diary and short sketch of the grammar of the language, because this is, I thought, was very essential to understand the... Another thing, because the language is a Koine and draws its lexical resources from four different varieties of Great Andamanese, I thought that it would be good to document the source of the variation. So every word which had phonetic variation has been documented in the dictionary, and we have the sound files for it. So this was a very hard task, but we achieved it with the great success, I would say. We tried to give etymology of the words, because we tried to find as much as we could, but certainly all of the words are not complete for etymological information. Cultural, anthropological, linguistic, mythological, and scientific information are given at the end of some of the entries under notes to contextualize the word under consideration. At times, I have also given a real incident, if that pertains very because it's very relevant to the entry as such. Some interesting statistics of this dictionary: birds related items, 107 names are there, and fish related 151 terms, flora related are 369 names, illnesses 56 kinds. I'm sure there are many more in the community. There are 21 names for crabs and many, many more. The dictionary comes with several indices and appendices. Words are broadly classified into 62 semantic domains, and one can use the dictionary by searching words by semantic classification or by scientific names of various words of flora and fauna. A Great Andamanese English lexicon is given at the end, as well as Hindi and Great Andamanese English lexicon, three languages. So the dictionary is equipped with several appendices with the lexicon, as well as scientific names are also given, and there are many, many more. Our metadata is very, very elaborate, which you cannot see it in the dictionary, but it is in the data bank, that we have documented its source of the data, the name of the investigator, the date it was collected, the location of the recording and particular mini disc, track and group number, page number of the notebook it was written on by the investigator. So if there's any doubt about any word, we can go back to its source without any problem. And I hope that this endeavor of ours is liked by people, because as I said, that if as the geneticist says, if the great Andamanese are the remnants of the first migration out of Africa 70,000 years ago, then what we are offering you here is an ancient world of recognition. I will give you a small demonstration of this dictionary, which is in the CD-ROM. This is the home page of the dictionary, and as you can see, it has English. You can search by English words, you can search by Hindi words, and you can search by part of speech. You can search by sort from end. This is very, I'll show you, it will be very useful for linguists. And you can also search by Great Andamanese script. I forgot to mention that when I started working on this language, I realized there was no script. And generally, the tribal languages don't have their script. So I had to give them a script too, which was not part of my project, but I did it. And I loved doing it. So I adopted the Devanagari script, which is very scientific, and to suit the needs of Great Andamanese. And if you want to see the Great Andamanese words, then it is here. The Great Andamanese words that are written here are in phonetic transcription, and as you can see, there are phonetic symbols given at the end here. This is the home page I showed. Let me show you the whole of it. And there are phonetic symbols here, so one can type any word. For example, let me see this. Okay, so you get this word, which is koreng. Now you see there's a variation. There was a speaker who said korang, and that's given in the Great Andamanese script, and another speaker which pronounced is koroin, again given in Great Andamanese script. The etymology is jeru. So the etymology is given here, and it is a noun, and it is dugong, which is given in Hindi, the meaning. There's a whole sentence, koreng sare tara tal mio phong tibi knong kom. That means dugong lives in the stone caves of the sea, and there's a Hindi translation of it. And then there's as I said, we have given cultural notes or the indigenous knowledge notes here. And this is what the information was given to us. The dugong has highly developed sense of hearing, so one has to be quiet while hunting. And then it has a very good facility. You can go on to the next one, which is Arain, which is a variation of this. And you can see this. You can go back to Korain. And similarly, you can type, for example, any word here. Liu means name. You can also do it from here, the whole word, or you can type a word if you know the Great Andamanese. Litu is a kind of a muscle, you know. And this is the Great Andamanese way of Okay, let's see. These are related words. So, aka ek hai.
Aka ek hai.
Now, you see, this is a etymology is both. So, this is Boa Senior who's speaking it. So, you can see that her voice is.
Aka ek hai.
It means liar, and there is a whole sentence here. But it is also related to other words, which means you can go to aka ek hai, which means useless fellow. You see? So they are related, and then you can go on to here, which is a Khora word actually, but I was not very sure, so I have not put the etymology. And this is another speaker who's speaking it, as you can see. So you know, similarly, this is very interesting. Akajira is a noun which means chili, but then it is related to akajira, which can also be spicy, like in English you have, you know. And akajire is a verb, which is again, I think, related to chili.
Akajire.
which means to abuse. And this is a bow speaking. The one who has a foul mouth. So you see, you can go the relative. Now if you want to see in English, you can search here for English, and let's say if I type fish, okay. So you see, there are so many names. I forgot to tell you that here, you know, this plus sign gives you all the varieties of fishes. Now look at this. And you know, you can go to any here, and it, you know, you can see that fish. Let's let's see this Bouton. It was a very interesting fish I saw. Yeah, this is a fish, I never saw it before. You know, it has a fish with a dot. And in Hindi, they say bindi or tikuli machli. And this was something. And most of the pictures in this dictionary are taken by me, because I lived in the jungle with them at different seasons, and different seasons brought them different fishes. So I could, you know, this is Chalemo. Whatever we could, you know, get the information. Now suppose instead of fish, if I type snake, you have such a variety of snake. But this is the most interesting one, Baralo, a kind of a smooth, shiny, non-poisonous snake with a green bronze back that lives in the coconut tree. This information, I never saw the snake, but I got the information from the native speaker, so I recorded it. But the most interesting part is this. The snake is known for its oily secretions, which were supposedly very beneficial for the skin. Young girls catch it to rub it on their bodies as a moisturizer. Generally, while one girl holds the mouth, another rubs the struggling snake against her body and face. Apparently, the struggle increases and enhances the secretion. So, this was a very interesting fact. I was told the moment the young girls see the snake, they just leave everything and run after it. So, you can also see the words from Great Andaman script. And this is the Great Andaman script. You type any word, and it takes you to the same entry. Like this. If you want to see by Hindi, again you can, you know, there are so many words for egg. And this is, okay. And if you want to see by categories, I mean categories are the means, basically the semantic domains that I was talking about. So you have words sorted by activity and event, address, term, animal, and so on and so forth. And you can see that there are, let's see, illness. So if you click here, you get all the varieties of illnesses on the left margin of the screen also. And these are the various kinds of illnesses that we recorded. As you can see, there are quite a variety of them. Look at this. This is the illness which none of you would ever symbolize it in your language, right? Umili, onset of pain due to snake bite. So, it's the onset of pain, not the pain. Okay? So, such minute differences. Then you can also sort the categories by part of speech. So, for example, ADV is for adverbs. You click on ADV and you get a lot of, see, all these various adverbs that you can get. And you can click on any, and you can, for example, let's say, yeah, this is good. There's a whole sentence as an example. Oh, it's not playing here. Some problem. Never mind. So you see, this is what is left and sought from end that I thought I'll show you. This is all the words are put in the reverse fashion so that linguists, if they want to know what the words end in, you know, which is the most common syllable or the most common vowels or consonants, this is a good picture. It gives I-ending words, ch-ending words, a-ending words. Somebody said, oh, this is very good for writing poetry in Greater Andamanese because you know what will rhyme with what. So, and then there is a whole deal of more information here which we have given, how to use dictionary about Great Andamanese, though it is given in the printed form, but if somebody just, so the, this is about Great, there are four distinct tribal groups and all those things are given here, and the regional varieties are given here, as you can see. Sounds of Great Andamanese. This is very interactive, and Suhas helped me design this so well, because for a lay person who doesn't know much about, you can, you know, click on, it's not showing full. You know, this is a page on vowels and consonants and vowel clusters, and any of the consonants, you know, you just click, it immediately takes you to Wikipedia. So you can, you know, so this is all in the CD. So people who do not know about, I'm not sure whether the Wi-Fi is enabled here or not, but if it is, then you can easily see what does that sound really stand for in never mind. Okay, so all right. So this is the program of Lexic Pro. See, voiceless retroflexplosive. So it immediately, and there are many other interactive portions which can take you like this. So coming back to this, I just would like to show you last picture of Great Andamanese in their dancing gear. And this was taken during the post-tsunami camp, you know. There's another one here. Thank you for your attention. I thought...
Thank you so very much, Anvitaji, for an amazing presentation, but also such a commitment to the work. It works at so many levels.
I enjoyed it.
It's amazing. I have the pleasure of asking maybe a couple of questions first before turning it open to what I'm sure are many other questions. And I would like to say that not only some of your publications, some of your excellent work, but a few other people have brought things here. I'd like to mention Sophie Grigg in particular from Survival. We're very lucky to have her here today, and there's some information about Survival. So for those who are interested, please talk to Sophie here in the front about her work and what she's doing in Survival. I have a couple of questions to start off with.
Yeah.
You chose a very interesting word, of these colonizers, you said, to describe the Andamanese. Now, normally one thinks of colonizers, the people who come last, but if you say, yes, well, they came 70,000 years ago, so they were the colonizers then, do they think of themselves as coming from somewhere else, or do they think of themselves as indigenous autochthonous to the area?
I'm happy you asked that, because I asked several of those people, surviving people, they all said that they never came from anywhere. Mm-hmm. They have been here all along, and they said their forefathers and their foreforefathers, they belong to the to the land here.
Okay. So by that, I mean, if they are colonizers, then we're all colonizers, aren't we?
Yes.
If 70,000 years of colonization ago makes us all pretty much more reason than that. But I do have two deeper questions, really. One is, you mentioned this PGA that you call it. It's a kind of amalgam of different parts of the Andamanese languages. Does that make it perhaps then maybe not very old in itself as a language? And, I mean, this is provocative, it may be somewhat rather like Nagamese or something like that. And if they're not speaking that now, What are they speaking? Is Hindi current? Or what else is spoken?
You know, this question has bothered me also, that if the language is a Koine and it's a mixture of four languages, then it's a fairly new language. Mm-hmm. Yes, but I looked into it very closely. The syntactic structure, as I mentioned, is more or less of Jero. And the lexicon is derived, from various different sources.
Okay.
So the Jero is one of the very old languages. So we cannot say that it's very new, indeed. As far as the, what was your second question?
What are they speaking?
What are they speaking now?
They
speak Andamani Hindi, which is not the standard variety of Hindi. It's a little deviant form, but they all communicate in that Hindi. They certainly communicate in Andamani Hindi to their children. But even among themselves, the older people do communicate in Andamani Hindi. They only use this language as a code language when people like you and me are there and they don't want us to understand.
So perhaps actually the language use went up with your arrival.
Yes, very true.
Because
I was trying to practice Great Andamanese with them, so they were also started. They also started speaking with me. And in fact, there were Boa Senior once made a remark, and she laughed and she said, "When you come, we speak our language more than when you are not there." So she wanted me to stay on. She said, "You stay here and don't go anywhere, because then because she used to lament that young people don't speak their language anymore, and
sure.
So on and so forth.
Sure. Well, thank you. I have many more questions, but I won't dominate. Let me open this up. I'm sure there are many people who have questions and comments and thoughts. Please.
Were there any... Did you ask the people who do still speak the original language, did you ask them about whether they tried to teach it to the younger generations and the reasons that it isn't spoken to the Western people?
Did they try to teach the younger generation? Yes. All the time I ask this question, and they said the younger generation is not interested because they want Hindi film songs, they want to sing Hindi film songs, they want to speak in Hindi, they want to visit Port Blair, the city capital of the Andaman, and they don't want to stay in Jammu. So they thought the younger generation is not interested. But I think more devastating fact is that they do not speak among themselves, who are older generation people. So when they don't speak, how the children will get any initiative to do that? And when I asked them, why don't you speak? And they said, now since we use Hindi so much, there is no point in speaking in greater language and effort. I remember this because the first day in 2001 when I landed this place and I asked an Andamani speaker, how do you say I'm hungry? She said, let me think about it. And she took a little while to give me a sentence, and I'm hungry, because I thought this is the kind of a sentence her children must be saying all the time. So that showed me that they are really out of use. So they had to remember and do this. And that's why my job became more challenging. Because I had to spend longer hours with them and sit with them for longer hours to get anything out of it. But once it started, how language, you must have realized, if you are bilingual or trilingual, sometimes you think you do not know this, you have forgotten your second language or your mother tongue, whatever. But then it comes back. When you start speaking, it starts coming back, because it was latent perhaps. So this is what happened with Andamanese. My spending time with them and I had two research assistants in the building. All of us were there in the jungle, so they got motivated and they started speaking. In fact, towards the end of it, when I was recording narrations, as I was telling Mark, I noticed this person who thought he could not narrate even a single short story in his language, started narrating in his own language, and he was surprised at himself. He said, I did not know that. So the language got revived through documentation, which was an education for me too.
Alan, did you have a question?
Yes, that was very impressive and wonderful work. So I was going to ask really about the future, what your future plans were. I wasn't sure from this whether all this dictionary is on the web yet, because it's such a small place and it's so little has remained. It's terribly important to try and gather together everything that has survived. notebooks, photographs, and so on, and possibly a bibulous Oxford where Radcliffe Brown went later in his life. And I think our museum here must have some photographs, early photographs of Brown's in the Haddon collection. I was wondering whether you were thinking one day of having a site where everything is now known in the world about the Andaman Islands over its whole history could be accessed by people themselves and by us. Was that really possible in this case?
Yeah, well, there are two very good sites. One is www.andaman.org, which is a very good site of all Andaman. And old pictures, the maps, the languages, and, you know, some published material, unpublished material. It is a very good site, which I am used to refer to. And people who are interested, I would not forget to mention my own site, which I would request you to please refer to or log on to www.andamanese.net. Andamanese.net. And I have tried to give as much as I could, you know, and so there are songs and there are grammatical sketches, there are photographs, there are videos and audios of not just meeting the ones, but of Jarva and Andaman as well. But as far as the, you know, the pictures and the sketches that are left by Britishers who were there in the mid-19th century, and I try to show those photographs to my existing speakers. If they could identify a few things. Except this now junior whose photograph I showed you, other people, and there's another guy, Page, another of mine. Other than those two, not many people could identify hunting and baskets and other objects. And unfortunately, we don't have many pictures. So it's difficult. But what is interesting is that the kind of, you know, the kind of, the language, as I said, gives you all the things that you want to know about the society and culture. I came across a very interesting word called Ropuch in this community, which is used for a person who loses his siblings. And I was quite amazed to find this because, you know, I'm sure your language, and it was my language, has a word if you lose your parents, often. If you lose your husband, the widow, or you lose your wife, widower. But do you have a word in which you refer to if you lose your brother? What do you call yourself if you lose your brother or sister? You don't have any. But written in many languages, and I think all of them had this word in different forms, and Radcliffe Brown notices it, and rubbish. And, you know, similarly, you know, there's so many culturally related words that I came across, though there were no pictures, that I thought they were most important to document, and I have tried my best to document those too. And that shows so much about the culture, the community, the affinities, I mean, what kind of a kinship system they had, you know. So, I mean, there are many, many. I can go on and on, you know, there are many, many aspects about it.
Mm-hmm. It was very interesting talk. You talked a lot about vocabulary and the dictionary side of things. If you look at the range of languages that you're familiar with in the islands, how far are the differences, vocabulary differences or structural differences between the different languages within the islands?
Within the islands.
Yes.
Oh, the differences are stark and wide. You know, there's just no similarity, either in the linguistic structure.
Yes.
Typology of the two language families is very different.
Yeah.
And in Great Andamanese, it's a language with very high use of critics. And it is a very different way of organizing the grammar. You know, the first, the body is divided into, they conceive the body being divided into seven parts, mm-hmm. seven divisions. And each division is given a name, which is just a syllable. And that syllable is attached to all the grammatical categories.
All
the grammatical parts of speech.
Yes.
And this is a very amazing aspect of writing, you know, constructing a grammar. While Jarva only grammars are absolutely different from this. And I tried to do the reconstruction, but I failed because even the basic vocabulary does not match the Ongle Jarva, these are the Andamanese. Then I also looked into the anthropological and cultural related items and genetic. The blood groups are different. The way these two make their huts or cottages, whatever you say, That's really different. Jarvas are known to be tattooing their body. Unge and Jarvas, sorry, the great Anumanis are known to be tattooing their body. Jarvas and Unges never do. There are a lot of other cultural anthropological differences. So linguistic, cultural anthropological, genetic, and obviously historical differences are quite few.
So that will really follow up, because what spaces are we talking about? What's the size? What are the distances?
You mean the temporal space?
Or yes. Between these different places?
I do not know. At what time did the segregate from the DNA M that the geneticists posit 70,000 years ago? I have no idea, but according to my research, I certainly believe that Great Andamanese came later, and Ome and Jarva came much first. Sorry, Great Andamanese came first, and Ome and Jarva came later.
How big are the islands?
How big is the island? I'm not exactly. What one?
North to south. What is the distance?
But the distance must be not more than, 300 miles?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But most of it.
300.
Yeah. Maybe less. Doesn't count. Yeah. But you know how do you count? Because in between there is sea. And these are islands, as I said, they look like a big body.
Yes.
But they're not. And if you include the little island, Little Andaman, that's 100 kilometers away from Puglia, down south. So if you include that also. But you see, the hunter-gatherers, these are hunters and gatherers. The hunter-gatherer society never were supposed to be living in a very large area. You see? They live in small areas and the jungle gives them everything they need. In fact, that's what we know about Jarvas, because now they have started coming on the road, and we are very afraid that they might lose their traditional way of living. And the way the educated masses look at them is so defective. Because they think, oh, poor them, they don't have any clothes to wear, you know, they're living in a jungle. But come to think of it, if you look at it from the point of view of an economist, the demand and supply curve meet at an equilibrium point. And that's what Jarvas are. They have reached their equilibrium point much earlier than any of us. The demands are always satisfied by the general produce. If you ask them, they say, we have enough. In fact, we have more than enough that we can consume. Because the general provides everything that we want. They have, if they have survived 70,000 or 50,000 years, I'm sure they'll survive outlast us for many years to come. So we should not temper their life or their culture or their language or anything, but I'm afraid this kind of wisdom is not there in the people who administer the animals.
You mentioned the north, central, and east, who I know are not accessible anymore, but I think there were contacts in the past. Do you know whether there's any evidence as to which language family groups they belong to? Is it the Hung family, or is it the Great Andamanese, or is it not? Is there any evidence about that?
This website that I mentioned, the andaman.org, does list Sentinelese as a sister language of Ome Jarva. And they have some proofs that the Sentinelese also came from Little Andaman. So in the Little Andaman, Ome, Jarva, and Sentinelese, all three were residing, and then they moved towards north. So this, Government of India made some long distance recording, from the zoom lens, which I happened to hear, but I could not make out anything because it was really distorted. But Sentinelese, facially you can see, because the zoom lens does the zoom. Facially they look similar to Ongis. But linguistically, I do not know what language, but I have a speculation that it must be related to Ongis. A day when I won't mind working on them if provided, you know that. But I don't think this situation will come in my lifetime. And in a way, it's good if they are segregated, because you know what is the outcome once they start going into country. You must have noticed that very famous, or not infamous, photographer,
on day of tsunami and helicopters roaming on the island, that started shooting arrow at the helicopter because they thought it was interfering in their lives, which was false. So the situation is very pathetic, you know, in that island. And the problem is these the government of India does not listen to the intellectuals or educationists or you know, so it is very difficult to convince them that they should not interfere with their lives.
Yeah, thank you. Two part short question. One, the honey calendar that you just touched on briefly, and perhaps you could say a bit more about the significance of their understanding of time.
Uh-huh.
And the Baralo as well, that snake
Baralo
ritual, I wonder.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of our vernacular term of snake oil in English, and whether there's some relationship
between
this expression of snake oil? That moisturizer is called snake oil in English.
Why there is a snake oil?
It's called that, yeah.
Why did not
Charles correspondence or a sign of proto-link 70,000 years ago.
Well, I did not know there was something called snake oil existed in, I don't know. I have no idea. But, you know, that reminds me an interesting, this is a little digression from my main talk, but Boa Senior, I mean, talking about oil, Boa Senior used to say that she used to consider the black people very beautiful and handsome, the great Indians, and people like us, more like you, very fair and pink. She thought they look like skinned animals. So she thought that we were ugly and they were very good looking. And I told her that in the mainland India, we have a very $1 billion industry of cream, which is called Fair and Lovely. In India, it is sold millions, you know. It ensures fairness and fairness of complexion. I'm sure L'Oreal also has a kind of thing. And I told her that, and she was absolutely flabbergasted. She said, they should make a cream to make people look dark, not look fair. So, you know, the beauty is... and then so far as the oil is concerned, you know. But that reminds me, you know, I have also noted down lots and lots of information on various kinds of clays, the soil, and in the northern part of the Andes. See, these people are northern varieties of Great Andamanese, and that's where they used to relate the kind of bushes, the kind of clays and soils, and the medicinal aspects of it. It's all documented in this dictionary, actually. And they have various kinds of clay and soils which they use to apply for various ailments, for cooling their body, for measles, and stuff like that.
Did you draw historical sources as well? Were there linguists in the 19th century that studied the
Middle East
that you could draw?
Other than
Andrews?
No.
Could I probe a little deeper on something you said? You said it's crying out for salvage and documentation. I understand what you mean. It's quite a political statement, and quite an ideological one, in a way. Was it crying out internally? I mean, were the Andamanese themselves saying, would somebody please come along and document us? Or do you mean it's crying out linguistically for documentation? And then I suppose that leads on to the question of, is this a project that could in some way said to be led by the local community? Or if not, how does that partnership work? And how many of these products that you produce, these beautiful things, have made it back to the community and are being used in some way?
Yeah. Why I said they're crying out for salvage, because as you can see, the population base is so small. And the population base is small. Being small, what they should have used, they are not using. And what they have, whatever little population is left, what they have is storehouse. It's really a treasure that they have with them. It has to be documented. If we don't document, this treasure will be lost forever. And this is what happened. When I reached the island, there were 10 speakers, and some of them were very good speakers. 5 of them died. Only 5 are left. Out of those 5, only, you know, I would say 3 or 4 speak. Still, the 5th one is not the queen of the tribe doesn't speak the language anymore. So I thought they are really, but the will if you ask each and everybody, the will of getting their language known to others, the will of getting the knowledge that the language has contained known to others is very strong. And they do want somebody to do something about it. And that's why I said they are really crying out for the documentation and salvage. Salvage both of the community, the community as such, as well as the language. Both are important. Now your second question, whether this material has reached back to the society, I definitely has the intention of doing that. But I had been in England for last 10 months, and both the books came out while I was here. So I've yet to go back, and I'm planning to go back in the next year, which is just around the corner, to go and distribute this to them. So that, and that was one of the reasons why I translated into Hindi, because most of the Vietnamese children are going to Hindi medium school in Port Blair, so they can read it. And perhaps I have hope, maybe I'm hoping against hope, that the language may revive by reading this. But let me tell you, Mark, that I did launch two things in 2008 in Port Blair. One was the book of letters, ABCD book, you can say, in Great Andamanese. And another was a CD, DVD or CD of folk songs. Mm-hmm. Now folk songs were recorded for the first time in their lives. They never had. By the way, all these folk songs are also there on my website, andamanese.net. You can hear them. And so these folk songs, I distributed CD to every Andamanese, because you surprisingly know, every Andamanese family has a CD player. Mm-hmm. So they could listen to their voices and they were very happy. Book of letters I distributed to all the children, and they were so thrilled. And this book of letters is co-authored by one of the same now junior. I saw to it that the chief commissioner and the education secretary releases this. And he did it with in the school that the children, Great Andamanese children, go to. And we made this co-author to come and do the honors, now junior. And he had tears in his eyes. He couldn't believe that his language would ever be written down and be celebrated like this. So I have all the intentions, whatever little work I have done, I definitely will take it back to the Great Andamanese. My only disappointment is that the government does not want to do as much as I would like them to do. For example, I suggested to them that in the Indian school there is something called 0 hour in the beginning. They can easily devote that 0 hour to teach about the Great Andamanese, the community, the culture, the language, little rhymes or little songs, so that people are used to of hearing them or seeing. But he made a big promise in this education secretary, but he never did anything. So I cannot reach at that level. But as far as the community is concerned, they keep calling me and telling me that we read your book, and our children read your book of letters, and now they know the letters very much. So this was one way of imparting literacy also.
I think it's also important to mention that the demise of the language is not of the Great Andamanese's choosing. They were completely devastated by disease when the British arrived. Their numbers fell less than 150 years from more than 5,000 to 29, I think it got down to at one point. And so this absolute decimation of their entire the peoples, the grouping together of 10 peoples into a tiny island when they used to have such a huge area relatively to their numbers, and so it's not something. If when we hear people hear that only a few members of the community still speak their language, it's not something that's necessarily they would have wished, and it was entirely as a result of the disease and the way that they were treated and the way that the British behaved towards them in the desire to mainstream them and civilise them in their eyes, and really denigrated their culture and their way of life as something not worth keeping, which has had a devastating impact on them. So I think it's wonderful for them that they can have this and this sense that someone else is taking an interest and giving them pride in their knowledge, and that no one else for 150 years has shown any respect for.
Thank you for appreciating this. I hope they do also feel very nice, but they have yet to see the dictionary. But let me tell you the last visit I made at the Andaman Island, this Lexic Pro program that I demonstrated here, I demonstrated to them. And I made Boa Senior and Mount Junior and all such things. Because they were so thrilled, you know, that their voices were recorded. And because I tested the data before I put it in. So every word was tested again and again before I made this dictionary. And they were very happy that they ultimately their knowledge is going out of their island and people are going to read it. But the end product has yet to be seen by them. So this is what I certainly would like to do it. And I do not know how many are there to appreciate it really. No. I wish my junior was there. And he wanted to become a school teacher, you know. He told me that, why don't I tell the education secretary that he can be hired as a school teacher in the State Island to teach nursery school children. He says, I can teach them whatever I've taught you. Mm-hmm. And I was very happy, and I put in a word, but you know how it is, the reply, does he have a degree? How can a tribal answer gather a degree to teach? So this is how the whole thing ended. But I'm sure the children would appreciate, because they appreciated the book of letters also. And I'm sure they would appreciate the dictionary.
Thank you for that very important point. I much appreciate it. I mean, short of getting great Andamanese registered in the 8th schedule of the Indian Constitution. Piers, you have a question.
Perhaps part of the answer to what Mark was saying can't be known for maybe another 100 years. Because you say the young people are not interested at the moment, but what people want now is not the same as what they may want in 100 years' time. But if you document the language, that keeps the door open to various possibilities of knowledge or awareness or revival in the future. If you don't document it, the door is closed for next time.
Yeah,
I
agree
with
you. And that was one of the reasons I documented it. Though knowing everybody, when I started doing it, there were very few people, there were 36 of them. And everybody said, why do you want to work on this? There are only 36 people. This is how the reaction was of my faculty. Mm-hmm. And you know, the faculty did not let me go and leave to do the work. Because 36 members, why do you want to go all the way to document this language? But you see, I did not know it was the treasure was hidden in such things. So no, certainly. I also have hope that maybe it will be revived, because the children were studying in Vivekananda School in Port Blair told me that they are very eager to learn the language if I give them some way to learn it. And I told them the best thing is you talk to your elders. And why look at me? But as you said, who knows, the documentation may help. Because you know there are other linguists who have done this experiment in Australian Aboriginal languages of curiosity. He has a very successful rate of language revivals. Mm-hmm. So you never know, the language revivals can take a bit. This language may also be revived.
There's talk of language nests now, and these kind of programs that bring moribund languages back into life, and in North America's indigenous languages have done them in a few cases. The difference in that your documentation is so multimodal, it's so rich, mm-hmm. compared to the textual records of a generation or two mm-hmm. ago. In 50 years hence, if the files still work, if Lexi mm-hmm. Pro is still supported by our evangelist friends in Texas, mm-hmm. then there's a chance we'll be able to access those data records in an immersive and multimodal way.
This time when I visit Andaman, I'm also going to introduce those children studying in Port Blair to this website of mine that I'm talking about, so they can see, there are so many things on this website are available. It's in English, but all websites generally are English, but there is a Hindi lexicon also, Hindi Great Andamanese lexicon on this website.
Perhaps it might be worth doing some study also of the attitudes involved and the emotions associated with it, because we tend to assume, oh, young people, they just want whatever, whatever. And this is sort of stereotyping them in some way, which perhaps we don't really understand what's in that black box, because we're older people and we like these languages, so we don't understand really why they don't. For example, I'm just starting with a different tribal group in mainland India, to bring old people who are monolingual speakers into the school in Zirabar, because the school is authoritarian and harsh as an environment, and the children are unhappy. And the idea is to associate the language with the kindness of old people. And this may work as a kind of interim holding measure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I gave a couple of suggestions to the education secretary. There was another one which I thought may work. Is, you see, you cannot think of reviving a language, or you cannot think of reviving anything unless, in this modern world, unless it's associated with economics. And when I ask the younger generation, why don't you speak the language, they say, why should we speak the language? We want to speak Hindi or English because that's what is going to get us money. Because you can be employed in different places. And I know that, you know, ultimately everything boils down to economics of it. So it's economically not viable to speak your mother tongue, so they don't speak it. And this is not the situation of Andaman alone. I have seen it in Central India also. I've seen Kuruk, mothers bashing their children because they were not speaking Hindi and they were speaking Kuruk or Hariya or whatever. So this was nothing new to me. So I suggested to the education secretary that why doesn't he employ one of these Andamanis who speak the language? I mean, you don't have to pay very much. As a nursery teacher. And you make a job reserved for this to teach in the state island. They have a nursery school in the state island. And the same teacher can visit once a week in the other school where the other great Andamanese children go. And she can teach the language. She can teach somewhat of words, meanings, and things like that. And I said, once this is done, they will know that if they know the language, it's also doing some money, because they can be hired by the ministry. But again, as I said, you know, this fell to deaf ears. But your suggestion is also, I mean, we have tried, you know, in Northeast, we have tried something called night schools. And this has worked and it has revived the languages. For example, what they have done was where the old people got together and they decided that since young generation is not speaking, we will have night schools in the sense that after all your chores are done, children can come and we will teach them dance and music. This is how they started. And children are all very interested in learning dance and music. So through music they taught the language. And every day they come for half an hour or 1 hour, and it's a participatory function, everybody participates. And languages have been seen to be revived. But the problem with Great Andamanis is there are so few people. See, this can happen if you have a population of 500,000 and so on and so forth. But here you have 56, 55 members now. I mean, when I started with 36, I mean, how can you have night schools and things like that? So, you know, this is also the... That's what I'm saying, the community is getting wiped out along with the language.
Any final thoughts? If not, then I would like to thank you, Mohana, from all of us for such a wonderful, stimulating presentation, also a kind of call to arms and action for many of us who work in this field. So, Amitiji, thank you very much.
Thank you.